down the rabbit hole? This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole, now live, Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. This is Jason M. Caldwell, together again with my co-host, Zachary Louie. How are you doing this week, Zach?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you doing?
Doing real well, sir. Glad to have you back, and we're going to get some more Asian knowledge dropped on us this week, aren't we?
Yes, we are. More on the martial arts context, but let's go through some announcements first.
Well, I want to remind everyone of something very important, the fact that we are, going on about, three quarters of the way, almost going on the end of September. However, if you go to domagicwithak.com, it is not too late to get involved in this Do Magic Challenge. It is beginner's mind and can be began anytime in the month of September.
Yep, it's never too late. Andrea and I started yesterday, so you can join in anytime in the month of September, too.
Well, let's let them know that we are recording this, a week in advance, I believe, so I don't want people to think that you just started by the time they hear this episode.
That is true.
Yeah, you'll already be a week in, so they might get confused, but, you know, no big deal. What's going on with you up in Canada right now, man? Fill us in on what the good word is.
Well, mostly just been focusing on the different programs I'm going to be making around Wuji Xuan Life Wellness. So, prepping up a Reiki program. So, for anyone that's interested in traditional Reiki and how to actually use it in a practical way, shoot me an email, and I'll send you all the contact, and I'll probably have a webinar in the next few weeks around that also, talking about Shinto, Taoism, Buddhism, and its influences on Reiki, as well as the martial arts that Sui Sensei knew.
Well, go ahead and give them your email, Zach, just in case people don't know where to find you.
So it's admin, so admin, at Wuji, WUJIXUAN.org, and I'll provide Jason with the email so he can put it down below in the description if people are interested too, just to make it easier.
Excellent. Okay. Well, is there anything else you'd like to let the public know? Because I'm not doing anything else publicly for a while.
Let's see. I'm tentatively going to be doing a public ritual that would include virtual stuff, but I'm still thinking about it, so I'll update the audience later on as the month of October continues, but I'm thinking about it.
Well, keep in mind, folks, that I'm sure Andrea would like you to know that the Cleveland Conjure series is still going on. Go to AndreaVenomous.com and look under Cleveland Conjure, and you will get all the dates and times for the classes that are going to be in Bedford at the Spirit Apothecary.
Yep, and definitely, if you haven't registered for the course, go for the shapeshifting course, or Shapeshifting 365. Andrea's done a whole year course on that, and it's going to be the most amazing course you take. It literally is life-changing. I've done it, and it really puts everything you do on a whole new level.
It really is, and you want to, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, it's AndreaVenomous.shapeshift to get all the details on that. But if we are rolling any of those URLs, I'm sure if you go to AndreaVenomous.com, you will find them regardless. All right, so as we promised you some more Eastern wisdom this week, and we have Richard Clear with us tonight, speaking about the healing aspects and the martial aspects of Tai Chi, and I might even get him to talk about some other martial arts related things as well. I hear he's quite accomplished. Zach, why don't you tell us a little bit about the guest that you've brought on tonight?
Well, Richard has spent 40 years in martial arts, and particularly he specializes in Tai Chi, Xing Yi, Bagua Zhang, and various other martial arts. And he's in the Black Belt magazine, he's been featured in Fox National News, and he's in a whole bunch of places. But the main thing I absolutely love about what he presents is the practical aspects of everything he does, and how it has to work. So, Richard, give us a background on just, you know, what got you started in all this.
I grew up in really bad inner city neighborhoods in the 1970s, and basically, when I was about 10 years old, was the first time that I had a knife stuck in my face, and it was two guys, kids, that were somewhere between the ages, I was, like I said, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. They were 17, 18, 19, 20, something like that, and they wanted the school booster candy and the money that I had with that from the candy bars that I had sold. And there had been other odd and end things, but that was kind of a more extreme one, obviously. And I just, by looking at the neighborhoods, knew it was not going to get any better, and that I was going to have to be able to defend myself, and that I was going to have to be able to defend myself for real. So marching up and down the floor and going Kia was not going to, wasn't going to help me for what I needed. And so I actually got started with boxing, and that was in the 1970s, so that boxing was kind of a thing then. The first Rocky came out and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And then once I got to a certain place with that, Taekwondo had kind of started to become popular. You know, you saw some of the television shows where somebody would be kicking and some of the movies and that kind of a thing, and I thought, well, yeah.
Ernie Reyes Jr.?
Yeah, that exactly, when he was a kid, yep. And it was, okay, if I can use my feet like that too, that would be useful, and fortunately had access from someone that had learned in the military, and so got trained that, and he'd also been a biker and had a lot of street fighting stuff, so got hooked up on more of that, and I liked it, and just kept doing it, and other situations happened where I did have to use what I was learning in order to protect myself, and as I kept going and then really started to get into the martial arts, anything I learned had to basically do well or exceed compared to anything I had studied prior to that point. So I started off with some things that had a basis in reality that would work, and went to things that would continue to work. If I found something and it was like, this just wouldn't work very well against somebody that I've experienced in the street, I just wouldn't study it. I didn't see a reason for it.
So, right. You're doing some pretty hard-hitting stuff, man. You started off as a boxer, you got into Taekwondo. I mean, these are hard-hitting sports. Very, very physical, very direct. Mm-hmm. So, What introduced you to Tai Chi? Because this is becoming more, not so much into the blunt force trauma that you're used to.
So, Tai Chi, the first time I really experienced it for fighting purposes, I was studying tiger style kung fu and was sparring against a guy that also studied for my teachers, and I didn't know what style he did, and different people would study different styles, and I'm sparring him, and literally this guy taps me three times, starts one about the waist, one middle of my chest, and then one up towards my shoulder across body, and he's standing behind me, and I didn't touch him. And I thought, okay, I blinked, or I misread something, or I'm not sure what happened there. Hey, man, can you do that again? And he said, sure. And he did it again. And this time with me going after him with tiger claws, jumping at him.
Hmm.
And I was like, And I was like, what is that? You know, what, how, you know, what, I got to know what style. And at the time, had I known a little more about Bagua, I would have been like, okay, that was some kind of Bagua or something. But I just said, okay, is this praying mantis? Is this some kind of an obscure kung fu style? What are you doing? And the guy tells me Tai Chi. And I went, yeah, right. Ha ha, funny. That's, yeah. Okay, so what are you studying? He said, no, really. The only thing I study is Tai Chi. And I went, yeah. I went, okay, I got to have that. That's like I'm fighting a ghost. And I know I was hitting where you were at and not hitting you. And you tapped me three times and got behind me. And you were able to repeat that. I gotta have that. I gotta know how that works, because if I can do that in a real situation, that's great, you know, because either I can get the hell out of there or if it's like that and they're really coming after me hard with everything they got, you know, at least I'm not getting hit until I hit them. And if I can hit them three times without them getting me once, I'm certain I can turn one of those hits into a fight ending hit. And especially at that close proximity, you know, whether it be a hit to the neck or whatever. But anyway, so I've got to have that. So I was in the middle of an 88 move, Black Tiger, Shang Tung Black Tiger Kung Fu form. And I went to my teacher and said, I got to have what that guy there's got. And he was, oh, he's one of the senior Tai Chi students. I got to have that. And I said, I really respectfully don't want to learn any more of the Tiger. I've got to have that. And I was doing a little bit of Tai Chi already for health. I just didn't realize its martial thing could be as potent as what I was experiencing.
Right. I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest myths around Tai Chi, where you can't use it practically and people think it's old people in a park doing things in slow motion.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, we talked a little bit of the martial side on, you know, what got you into the Tai Chi, but what are the health benefits you've noticed from it?
So when I started Tai Chi, it was for the health, because while I was doing the other Kung Fu, I had heard about Tai Chi being really great for you that way, and I have an inherited form of arthritis that, like, you can really see it on my fingers where they're twisted up a bit and that kind of a thing, where your body, as you grow, it just does that. And my mom had noticed it on me. This was when I was about 16. So I'd been doing the martial arts for a few years, the Kung Fu for one or two at that point. And when that got pointed out to me, the way she asked me about it was, she said, hey, does that hurt yet? Now, a 16-year-old kid, if you're pointing at something on their body and you say, does that hurt yet? You know, you get a response, which got for me, which is, what do you mean? What are you talking about? That doesn't hurt. I'm fine. Oh, no, that'll hurt soon. My mom had me when she was 16. So she was only 16 years older than me when I was 16, so 32. She could remember like 10 years earlier and said, oh, in a few years at the most, you know, a couple, three, four, that'll start hurting. And that. And I was like, okay. I had heard that Tai Chi was great for arthritis. So along with the other Kung Fu, I went and started studying Tai Chi. Now, I did it very casually at that point and very, okay, I'm learning the Tai Chi form, no big deal. Great, flow the energy like this. Okay, that'll make me not have this arthritis pain. Wonderful, great. Didn't give it a lot more weight than that. The next year, I went to a funeral for one grandparent, and 6 months later, went to a funeral for another grandparent. Now, those grandparents were in their 50s when they died. But I realized, and that was on one side of the family, and then I realized that the last I remembered of any grandparents on the other side was when I was 4 years old. Now, thinking about this, my mom was 20. And so I was like, how old were they when they died? They were both younger than 50 years old.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And so that was the genetics. And so then I had heard also in the Tai Chi, oh, and it's great for, like, really healthy for you for living to a ripe old age, too. So when I went to that second funeral, I kind of doubled down and started to do a little bit more, still doing the Tiger and the other Kung Fu. And then it wasn't long after that when, 1983, so I was probably 19, when I had the experience with the other guy sparring him that got behind me like that. So I kind of came into it gradually, starting with the health, hoping to live a lot longer than my relatives, direct relatives.
Yeah, definitely.
And then got into it for the fighting side because there was a part to it that I really didn't realize was as powerful as that when I started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, It's kind of amazing what Tai Chi can do from a health perspective. I mean, I teach Qigong Tai Chi myself, and when I was looking at your videos, I was kind of like, wow, this guy's gone through a lot in terms of the practice, the refinement, and just being able to physically express it. And that's because I find not a lot of people in Tai Chi can do that, unless they're very high level. But you break it down in a pretty systematic way.
Yes, yep. Part of it for me is that even now, I still have at least one teacher that I study from at a time, and I try to have two or three that I can go to regularly or bring to me regularly to study. And so a lot of people, when they've got 40 years of time in, 41 years, 42, something like that now, what happens is that they really have had about 10 to 12, 15 years worth of real full-time education, if they're lucky. And then they did kind of a very part-time-ish thing after that, where maybe they get a couple seminars a year for 2 days each one, this kind of a thing. And most years, I get 6 full weeks of full-time instruction, which, if you add up the hours, it's somebody that's going to class twice a week for an hour and a half a week. So you're getting about 3 hours, 4 hours worth of instruction a week. I get double that every year still.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's part of it is that and then what I found in more recent years is I'm having to go to people that are doing cutting edge research on things like fascia, on certain aspects of the Chinese medicine, or I'm having to look at expand my what I'm looking at a little bit, but still within the realm of what's covered by Tai Chi and the internal arts to try to get better understandings and things like what really is Qi. Or what is it that somebody's calling Qi, but what is the mechanism at work or the mechanisms at work and how do they work and all of that. And probably for myself, I would be a bit more well-respected if I had a great memory for names and terms, and I don't. I tend to want to do what works, and I don't care if they call it, ABCD version. It doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more concerned with the functionality and do I understand it well enough to apply it.
So
the other thing you see there then is that out-of-the-box teaching that you see me doing where I break things down very simply, and mm-hmm. I did that after I got my bachelor's degree in college because I had a whole bunch of $5, $10, and $25 words, and I found that when I tried to communicate with people who were friends who didn't go to college, I kind of sounded like the educated crazy man, and so I started learning how to speak like an eighth grader even to convey very difficult or more complex subjects, and I've done that repeatedly and as with the arts as much as I can, because I found that's the faster way to get people to a higher level is if they fully can comprehend what they're doing with the basics in the beginning and build on that. Then when you start to get to more deeper complex things, they have a real basis to work from.
Oh wow, that's really cool. So let's talk some practicalness. I mean, you look younger than you are. You sound younger than you are. You've got the crippling. You've got what could be crippling arthritis, and it's not crippling you.
I'm a type 1 diabetic. My grandma that died at 49 on my mom's side, she died of a heart attack, and I knew that coming up. And so I've studied things that had to do with not having a heart attack, and there's some cancer in the family. And that what I didn't realize was that grandma died of a heart attack because of type 1 diabetes, which is inherited through the genetics.
Yes.
And I got type 1 diabetes when I was in my 30s and probably would have had it like her when I was late teens or early 20s, but I had started all the kinds of the health stuff seriously already and was the Qigong and the Tai Chi and was doing that, and it probably held off that diagnosis for the better part of 10 years.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. So, okay, so let's talk some practical, why do you think it was able to hold off the diabetes for over a decade, and let's talk about the arthritis, why do you think that you were in such better condition than someone normally would be with your condition?
A couple things. The one that comes to mind, just to tell you initially, talking to you, is that I remember when I was like four, and being around my grandma, she looked like what you think of the very elderly granny.
Mm.
And think about it, she wasn't 49 yet. That's when she died.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
So, and I'm talking about elderly, the white hair, the really kind of bent up, and all that stuff. And mm-hmm. when I went to the funerals when I was a teenager, I was at physical peak. You know, you think 17-year-old who really has some physicality, they're towards peak at that point. There's some other peaks that you can talk about in your early to mid-20s, but you really are about as full of energy at 17, 18, 19 as you're going to get normally for mm-hmm. your life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And because I enjoyed what I was doing with the arts enough, not just the self-defense, but actually the movement, the what I could do with my body, the strength that I was able to develop and to use with the Kung Fu, I knew that I wanted to be able to do that for life, and that part of living to be older than them was going to require that. And so I really, with the longevity stuff, and that's part of what got me into the Qigong so early, I was already doing some Qigong stuff with the Tai Chi prior to, you know, that's what I was doing with the early part when I went and showed them, hey, I got this arthritis. I don't want to have pain from it. And I've got two grandparents that died, and all my grandparents are gone now and didn't live that old. I need the health stuff from it. And so really started pursuing that as a big part of study, or certainly a section of my study, and kept doing it with those goals in mind. And also looked at my body and my thinking, and the amount of energy that I, just physical energy I had, and all of that. And basically, when I say constantly monitored, I don't mean every day I got up and went, okay, how am I feeling today? Although sometimes, now more than then.
But where
I really looked quite often and said, is this the body and the mind and the activity and the energy level that if I keep this and work it like this, that, and mindfulness being part of all that, that I'm going to be able to keep this for a lot more years than is normal for my family.
Mm.
And so that's essentially what I did. And then, of course, looking at longevity practices and what's really involved in those practices. And things as simple as, like, one of the things that happens to diabetics type 1 is they get neuropathy. And neuropathy, for simplicity's sake, is where you lose your nerve sensitivity, and you tend to lose it in the feet first because it's the farthest away from your processing centers, your brain and your gut area. And when you lose that sensitivity, what happens is it's very easy to get an injury or a cut or a scrape or a scratch or some kind of an injury, and it doesn't heal right because the sensitivity to send the signals to your brain so that your body will do what it needs to do for healing, they don't happen correctly. And at first they happen slow, and then they don't happen well at all, to the point where then you get an atrophy or death, and then that's where people start having to get, like, body parts cut off and all that kind of stuff. And for me, that was horrifying, and of course I didn't want any of that. And so it was, okay, what do I do to keep that full sensitivity and to keep that good circulation? And to give you an idea, at 53, and with the family history I've got, when I go, my last blood pressure was 108 over 65.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Pretty good.
And my resting heart rate was like 62.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're talking a lot about health. And I know it's your call to Qigong Clear if you want to talk about this, but
it's good. I was just answering the question, so it's good.
Right. I mean, there was a sledding accident you had a few months back, and that actually, you know, from my perspective of, you know, an acupuncturist and in Chinese medicine and having internal martial arts, I'm like, well, wow, that's a epitome of, you know, cultivation work there, because you were standing the next day. Over yeah. that. So
yeah, standing the next day, not a lot more, but by the time a week had passed, I was able to walk the length of a couple football fields.
Right. Wow. So, I mean, for the people listening right now, I think it was, what, three places your vertebrae got broken in the spine?
Four cracked vertebrae.
Like, that in itself is amazing, because usually, you know, when you think of spines for... when they get cracked, even one, that can usually cut off, you know, make you paralyzed, but he had it in four places, and he was working the next day with the cast on the video. I'm just like, wow, like that is Tai Chi and Turtle Martial Arts to a whole new level.
Yeah. Now the one where we filmed it, where I've got that brace on and all that was probably 2 weeks later, give or take. The day that it happened, the doctor in the ER asked me to move my arms and my fingers, like wiggle my fingers and then move my arms and stuff, and I did, and his eyes got kind of wide, and then he said, can you lift your leg up? And I was like, yeah, it hurts, and wiggle your toes, and I said, it hurts, but I can do it, and showed him, and his eyes got a little wider, and he went, okay, now I'm going to give you the bad news and the good news. And that's when he told me I had my back broken four places. And I realized that the reason his eyes were getting wider each time is because he was like, the good news is you're not paralyzed. And okay. And at the time I thought, yeah, right, man. But as I've gone on and I've met other people now with back injuries and stuff, I realized that no, I was lucky I wasn't paralyzed or worse. It just, some of that's luck. Some of that is the training. It was compacting because I hit feet first. Probably going about 40-45 miles an hour on the sled. I thought it was a slope, and it wasn't. It was a ditch with a dead stop.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it was a straight impact in my spine from it. The force came up to the legs, and then, of course, the whole spine compacted from top to bottom. And then those four vertebrae cracking is where the force expressed out. Ideally, I would have expressed that out somehow out through my upper body. At that speed, I'm not sure that I'm completely capable of that level of impact at this point.
Sure. So, obviously, your preconditioning probably had a lot to do with it. I mean, you probably are substantially more limber than most men your age at this point.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no question. The doctor in the ER also at some point, I had called my senior student and said, come to the hospital now because this might be like really dire before we knew where we were at yet. And he came, and the doctor said to him and me both that I was in the best shape of anyone he had seen in the ER in the last year. And I said, yeah, well, it's January 23rd, so you mean in the last few weeks? And he was like, no, I mean any time since the beginning of last year to now, all ages. All
right.
Mm-hmm. And the big thing is with the Tai Chi and the Bagua and the internal arts overall, that all of that connective tissue musculature, for me, it's very dense and very, very well trained and powerful, like as it should be, and that connective tissue. And there's a pliability in the discs in between the joints, so none of them came out, none of them ruptured, none of them actually busted like that. All of the pressure went to the skeleton itself in the vertebrae.
Oh, yes. So you were very lucky. Bones took the impact.
Yeah.
Bones can heal. Discs cannot.
That's what I've kind of gathered out of it. And so the four bones have now healed up, and what little bit of residual issues I've got now is literally more about having spent 4.5 months wearing that brace than it is anything else, because there was some atrophy on the muscles and the nerves around that part of the spine that I'm still working on getting back to 100%. And I'm not there yet, but it's coming.
Sure. Wow. So you brought up the internal exercises as well. Why don't you give the audience a little bit of a rundown of what you did for yourself during this healing process?
I started right after I hit, and I don't actually remember the last 10 feet. Like, I'm sliding down this hill, which I had gone on with my son to sled, put my foot out to the side because I realized I was going like real, I knew I was going as fast as I normally go in the car. And I'm a little bit of a lead foot on top of it. So it was.
Right.
And so that wasn't good. So I put my leg out and started to slide through the snow with it in order to do it, and realized that it was cutting through the snow like I hadn't done it. So I put my foot back in because I realized if I did hit something that was solid, it'd probably break my leg. You know, it'd pull it or stop and go on. So I put my leg back in. I started looking towards the bottom, thinking, okay, there's going to be this sloping kind of a situation. I don't remember the last 10 feet, and the next thing I remember is realizing that I was in the most pain I had ever been in. So I was like, okay, I'm at a pain level of like a 10 here, a 10 plus. And then the next thing I realized is I'm not seeing anything. This is in my mind's eye, and I'm in the air. Because after you hit something like that at that speed, you bounce. You know, at first it was compact, and then bounced. And so I was airborne, realized I was airborne, and was like, oh, this isn't good. And started trying to literally wave through my body from head to toe, so that anywhere that I had that pain, if it was soft tissue, not even thinking about that I had skeletal breaks at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, that I would relieve that pressure and get it opened out. I remember hitting the ground and like where you kind of hit and then roll and hit and that kind of a thing. And I'm feeling super hot, like really heated, like I was on fire.
Right, but you're telling me you're airborne, man. You're airborne, and before you even think about a break fall, you're shaking yourself out to limber yourself out before the break fall, even.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, that's where it was at, and it feels like it was a moment in eternity, you know, like a still moment as opposed to an action.
Sure, but this all happened really fast.
It had to have happened pretty quick. I mean, what I was told by my wife, who was over on my son was above. And so he kind of saw some of that, and then my wife was across there. As I said, they saw snow fly everywhere, and then realized that something had happened. When I'm rolling on the ground and I've got this super heat, I'm trying to take off this snowsuit that I'm wearing because it's one that's designed for sub-zero weather. I was asked why I didn't jump off the sled when I realized how fast it was. Well, that ski suit was slick. It wouldn't have helped me. I'd have been going that fast without any kind of control at all. I don't know. It might have helped me, but I think it would have been a lot worse. I think I'd have hit that bottom in a bad position.
Right.
Anyways, so I'm trying to take off the ski suit, and I'm trying to get up to do it. Of course, as soon as I'm standing up, I fall back down. I'm not actually able to stand up. I did it one more time, and then I realized, okay, I'm hurt past normal hurt here. And I laid back down and yelled out, call an ambulance, and like that. And then had and kind of instructed, went into a very comfortable, peaceful mind state so I didn't aggravate the situation any further, and started telling them how to elevate my legs and cover me up with something because I had managed to get off at least a certain amount of that suit, ski suit, and all that, and, you know, before we waited on the ambulance.
Oh, wow. So, you go to the hospital. I'm sure they put you in traction, something of that nature, stretch you back out.
Actually, they let me land on a thing there for a bit, and then got me into the MRI and put me, like, said, okay, move over to the MRI table. And I started to do that and realized it hurt, like, a lot. And was like, I'm going to have help. So then they did help me get me on there and all that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And at some point, they were talking to me about sitting up. And that first time, it wasn't happening. I was just like, man, that's like somebody's putting a knife in me. We don't know how damaged I am yet, but I'm starting. And at that point, I asked the doctor to look at me for a concussion because I had felt the force as it expressed up through me go out. And I was like, just make sure I don't have some kind of brain or whatever damage. They did check me and said it looked okay. And then I was worried about internal damage. I think they were going to do an x-ray first, and that might have been where they decided to do the MRI because they were like, yeah, okay, we're going to have to look at your organs and see what kind of bleeding or whatever you might have. Like that. And so they helped me get on there and back off there, and we're talking about setting up. And the one or two times that I tried, I was just like, that is not happening right now. And it's not that I'm numb and can't do it. It's that it hurts like very few things I've experienced in my life.
Right, so you go through this whole thing, and eventually you wind up in the brace.
Yeah, so then they transferred me, because I told them, look, I make my living with my body and my mind and what I do with that, and so if it's a matter of getting a doctor that's a sports doctor, one of these guys that the next season, the guy that everybody thought was gone, couldn't come back out, that plays football, and we've got the Vols here, send me to that doctor. If it costs me $100,000, I'll figure out how to raise the money to do that because I can make a living doing that. But if I'm like paralyzed up, that I can't make a living with. And so they actually transferred me from that hospital at 11 o'clock. No, this was 4 o'clock when we went in. 11 o'clock that night, they transferred me to the Knoxville Hospital so that one of their specialists that does that work could look at me. And so then about 3 o'clock in the morning is when they said, okay, we're not going to have, because three of those brakes were just straight out cracks. One of those brakes had some stuff kind of coming off of it, and they had to see if they needed to go in and do surgery or if it was going to be okay. Well, at 3 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning, they decided it'll be okay to not do that, and we can always come back and do it later if we have to. Let's just put him in the brace. And they told me that, and then had this person come in that put me in that like built the brace and put me in this brace.
So I know that you get into the energetic aspects of the martial arts as well.
Yep.
So I'm curious, like, now that your mobility at this point has been restricted and you're trying to heal, what kind of internal exercises were you going through to help expedite your personal healing?
So I had a workshop in Houston that I had to leave for. I did this on Saturday. On Thursday, I was supposed to go to that. Well, on the day that I was in the hospital, they asked me to sit up on my own for the brace, and I was like, I couldn't. And then they helped me sit up, and then they took two big guys and put on either side of me and walked me, and they were like, okay, we're going to let you go now. And I said, not if you don't want to be picking me up off the floor, you're not. And they had a walker sitting there, and I was like, do you have one of those? Because I'm probably going to need that to be able to stand up. And they were like, yeah, oh yeah, okay. And they went and got the, and I thought that they would have been recommending this to me. But I get the impression they were blown away by the fact that I was walking and talking and whatnot. You know, not walking, but you know what I mean, that I was where I was at. Right, anyways, right. Got me the brace. I walk out of there using the brace. When I got home, same thing. And I thought, oh man, if this is how it's going to be, obviously, and the workshop was out of my mind at that point. It was more of, this is going to suck. And then the next day, I walked a few steps without it, not many. And then by about the third, so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I walked the length of my kitchen, and I couldn't walk without basically dropping in position and using my legs the way that you're supposed to for Tai Chi and for Bagua. But without doing that, I couldn't walk. And so, wow. I dropped into the position and then did about 4 laps around my kitchen at a kind of a quick pace, scared some of the family members. And I was like, no, as long as I'm doing this the way I'm doing it, I'm good. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to have to cancel this workshop this next week or I'm going. And they were like, well, how do you know? And I said, well, every day since the accident, it's been better. Let's see what it's like tomorrow. And so on that Wednesday, it was better again. And then I called the doctor and said, am I cleared to fly? I didn't tell him why. And they said, oh, yeah, you can fly. Just if you're up in the air for more than an hour, make sure you get up and walk around a little bit, which I'm thinking, you know, if there's turbulence, that's probably not the best idea. But, okay, thank you, click. And the Thursday, flew to Houston, taught the workshop there, took two of my guys with me that had been scheduled to go with me, taught more of it sitting down than I originally had planned and that thing, but still got up and did some of it. It wasn't for martial. It was more for the health and the healing. If it had been a lot of martial, I would have had to cancel it because I just wasn't going to be doing that yet.
Right.
And when I went to the airport, they let me out at the front, put me in a wheelchair, took me out to the plane. We flew, got there, put me out right off of the ramp from the airplane into a wheelchair all the way through the Houston airport and out to Kai Lewis is the where we went to his car, got in his car, went to the place we were staying, and I don't remember I think we got something to eat when we went there, but I mean, little bitty walking from here to there, not a whole lot of it. By the time we left, which was Monday, and came back, I walked through the Houston airport to the airplane. I got off the Houston airport, walked through the Knoxville airport, which is really small, so it's not like that's very far. But then we were parked out in the parking lot, and without getting a wheelchair, walked out to the parking lot to the car. So it improved that much more in that period of time like that. Now, the things I was doing, so when I got back, I went to a doctor that was the doctor who was going to tell me how long I was going to be in the brace for and what other things to know and expect. That doctor was a surgeon, and he said, hey, let me make this real simple for you. You're going to be wearing that for the next, you know, couple, 3 months. And I said, well, that's all nice and good, and if I wasn't educated in anything, that would probably be enough. However, Doc, I'm this guy that's been doing this as a martial arts as a living now since 1985, and I do Tai Chi, and there's things that I can do, but I need to make sure that I'm not doing something that's going to hurt me or hold me back. I got to know what it is. The doctor at that point didn't even want to talk to me at all. It was, hey, like, I'm scheduled for my next surgery. This is simple. I told you. And he didn't want to talk about it. And I went, hey, man, look. And I said, I can do stuff while I'm in the brace, and could. I could literally wiggle where there's a wave through my entire body from head to toe, skull a little less than the rest, but everything else. And I said, I need to know if that's going to be okay in the brace. And he said, hey, man, what I'm going to tell you is don't push it. And I said, look, I can do this inside my body where there's very little physical movement. And he's looking at me, and I said, well, I'll show you what I mean. Hold on to my arm. He holds my arm. I literally wiggle internally, and his eyes kind of look like, what the hell is that? And I said, well, this is what I'm asking you. and it was a funny conversation, but I was kind of pissed at the time, because it was like, you're not telling me any answers here, and I'm looking for answers. And what I thought of afterwards is, he was just looking at liability, like, I don't want to tell you can do anything, because you're going to go off doing whatever, and it's going to be my fault. And I just said, look, I'm trying to get some help here to know what it is that I can do. And he says, why do you want to do this? And I said, because I've been involved in this for over 40 years. He pops out with, well, I've been a surgeon for over 20. And I went, exactly. You don't realize how stupid that sounds right now.
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was pretty much the end of that appointment. So, and part of what I asked him was, if I can sit straight in a truly neutral position, would it be good? Because you're supposed to take off the brace to sleep. Could I take it off just to sit and let the back actually do that? To which he was like, don't do that. Okay, what about this internal movement? I don't know anything about that. Okay. So I didn't take it off and sit up, although if I knew what I knew now, I would have. But I did do where I was making sure that every part of every inch of me from inside that could possibly wave or flex or expand and stretch and contract, that I'd end or to some degree spiral all those softly, carefully, and that I made sure to get movement through me like that from head to toe. And that I did that regularly every day, so, you know, multiple times per day, ongoing.
So,
and doing that with breath and with mindfulness, mm-hmm. on where my breath and my action inside the body and outside were at.
Yeah, I was going to say, right. try to break down the energy aspect a little bit for the audience to understand. You know, some folks have experience, but a lot of the audience isn't going to. But I'm following where you're going with this.
Cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about the healing aspects, especially through your whole journey in the last few months around that. But yeah, I know year. Jason had a few questions around DimMac, because I know I was talking to him ahead of the show. I'm like, yeah, this guy knows DimMac, and you can ask him all those questions.
Sure.
Okay, look, I'm going to be straight up with you.
Yeah.
Okay. I have some experience in the martial arts. I have some experience with energy work, you know. Nowhere near your level. But I understand that energy transfer in a fight is not always, how do I word this, more impact than the physical output should have been.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So I guess what I'm trying to say with that is I've watched a lot of studies on YouTube and the internet of a lot of these energy workers being debunked, where yeah, they sure. can get the effects with their students because of the desire of expectation.
Yep.
But then someone else comes along who's completely not primed to the system, and they end up knocking the guy on his ass.
Yep.
I want you to tell the audience your personal experience a little bit with the energy work in a martial aspect, and I want you to describe what the difference is between the people who are being hucksters and the people who are doing this legitimately. And why aren't we seeing more public examples of the legitimate stuff outside of the private demonstrations?
Okay, so that's a lot of stuff, right? So
weird question, sorry.
So if you've got that question written down, let's take it in pieces, because there are a lot of pieces there. So to start with, a couple different things. Okay, one of them is, and I'm just talking about the how at the moment. So there are a lot of different aspects and ways to how, and ones that go from very simple, very easy to illustrate, to higher level, and then really higher level, and then to the point of where even trying to tell somebody, it's going to sound like some kind of voodoo or something, right?
Right, right, sure.
And so I always try to take the simplest approach with that kind of thing that I can. And then obviously depending, and if I'm talking to somebody privately, personally, I mean, it'll be, okay, I try to figure out where you're at, talk to you about where you're at, and then I'll take it one step higher. And if they're really like on the game with that, you know, and it's, they get it, I'll take it until they start going, I'm not following you anymore. Okay, well, let's back up to that place that you're ready for, and then from there. Because anything else is going to me trying to say lighter to a caveman, and it's just not going to be a good conversation on either side.
Let's break it down this way. Is it possible to affect someone without physical touch, for one, in your opinion?
You know, I've done a decent amount of studies on that kind of thing, and I've got some skills that way. What people forget and or don't realize or leave out when it comes to that stuff is that everyone has some ability in that regard. And they've got that kind of an ability regarding themselves, and then they have that ability regarding their interaction with or to others. And so what happens is you get somebody who's got a method, or they learn a method, and I did this. And the method that the guy gave me was one that one of your practice things for is you practice while you're in your car in traffic. If someone is tailgating you, you practice projecting a thought in a way that makes them quit tailgating you. And I used it, and the method worked, and it worked well. And one night, I'm driving down, this is in Florida, there's a highway, I can't remember the name of the highway anymore, it goes from St. Petersburg to Clearwater. And there's this dude, I guess it's a dude, who at the time, who's behind me, and he is tailgating me like mad. And I'm doing this, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing this, and he wouldn't back off, not at all, none, zero, like right on me. And we're going, you know, 50, 60 miles an hour, where I'm going, damn, he is going to cause us to have an accident. Why isn't this working? Is it because I'm too concerned about not having an accident and watching the road? Is it that I'm somehow not doing the method right? What's going on? You know, and finally, we get to a place where the road opens up enough that this dude can get over and come around. And I just like get, or I got over, whatever it was. We managed to get in different lanes where I could see. And this guy floors it past me. And when I look over to go, what's going on there? This dude had both hands clenched to the steering wheel in a death grip. Had his head leaning up on the steering wheel, glaring like he was crazy ahead of him into the thing. And I was like, oh shit, that's a somebody that, you know, down the, if you were two blocks away and he was walking down the street like that, the average person would have seen him coming and they'd get off the street.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was his mindset. So that meant the little bit of, hey man, you should get over, that I was projecting back at him was a flea to his elephant of, I'm going that way, you know, run you over to get there. And
man,
so
on a mission.
And he didn't have to have training to get there. He just had to have that kind of resolve, which he obviously had. And right. So what happens is you get people that they do something that is very subtle. They go in, and I'll just use the example of a Tai Chi guy that's got basic fighting. Let's say they've got some basic boxing, some basic wrestling, and some basic kicking. But they've got this intent that they've developed with their students or whoever, typically, but whoever, where they've got some intent coming off. And then they go in against an MMA guy that maybe that guy's skill in boxing and punching and kicking and grappling is okay. Not even phenomenal, but okay. But their intent. But they go in against championship guys and they win because they go in there like an animal and they're determined and they're going to win. And so they'd come in with that animalistic determination against a guy who's training. I'm going to stare at you in a way and it's going to cause this effect to happen. And they get their ass handed to them and they're going, I don't get it. What happened? I trained that stuff. They forgot the other guy has intent too, and you ignored the fact that he had that intent. And if we're talking about you had 20 pounds of laser focus, he had 100 pounds of animal I'm crazily going through you focus, that 100 pounds wins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not just that, it is the physicality too. But, you know, you can get somebody who can fight okay and they're afraid. And somebody flinches at them and they flinch back off. Well, what's their intent? They're afraid. You get somebody who's in there going, I'm going to eat your lunch. And you go, but you can't fight that good. I don't care. I'm taking him apart. And they're going to. They'll get in there and do damage just because they had the intent to really do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an answer to that part of your question, is that I've found that people think that the internal power somehow just completely negates whatever the person's got physically. And I don't find that. I find that even though it's hard to quantify exactly what somebody's pointing out, you got to quantify it so that if I go up against a guy that's 200 pounds of just regular human being pushing back against me, that's one thing. You give me a person that's 300, it's going to be a little harder. It just is. There's 100 pounds more weight there. 400, it's going to be harder. You give me a 500-pound monster, it's a 500-pound monster. There is a limit, and it's who's got more. Now, ideally, with the internal, you're going to get a lot more juice for what's visibly seen. What I find a lot of times, too, is that people think that just one or two or three aspects of that internal training is going to deliver the whole ball of wax. And I have found that to just not be the case. And the example I'll use here is somebody that they're 90-pound stick, and they think they're going to go up against a 400-pound guy with internal and do something. That 400-pound guy is probably going to crush them because physically they just don't have anything. And they thought they were going to make up for it all with their mind, either their mental focus or their mental projection. And it's going to add something. But it's not going to cover that great of a gulf. There's always going to be what is, if we quantify, video games are a great example. When you've got, what's your firepower? What's your duration? What's your intensity? How long is it? What's the range of it? What's the strength of it? And if you took all those parts and let's say you put internal as one of those little boxes across, well, you could quantify that to some degree. And if it's like internal 100%, everything else is a zero, and you get the other guy, and everything he's got is 80-90%, and then internal. Well, he's only got 20% there. Because everybody's got it. They're alive. They're walking around. They've got something.
Right.
And if it's not trained as much. Well, when you add it all up and you come up with an aggregate figure, they may have twice what that guy doing the internal's got.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the more important part of the internal, and if we're talking, let me just say it this way. If we're talking about the average approximately 20-year-old at full peak, full physicality, all the strength, all the ferociousness and the mental acuity and the mental drive and all the things there, they're going to be a high number on that game we were talking about. And so if you take an 80-year-old guy, his internal is going to be high. Maybe his mindset is high. He's going to have a low number on a bunch of those others just by virtue of being 80-something years old. That doesn't mean they don't have some of it, because maybe they're able to train for it or whatever, but they're going to have low numbers on a bunch of those, of the stamina and the same kind of things, just by virtue of that's how life works for us human beings. And if you compared the two, the aggregate number at the end, you know, who's got the higher number, that's the one that's most likely going to win if it's all-out war.
Well, Richard, I think I would like to have you back some later date if you're willing to talk more about the dumb mock and stuff like that, so we can actually go over some of the ideas of the technique and the philosophy behind it. But, man, I tell you what, we could have easily had a two-hour show tonight, but I got to cut us off because we've been talking for an hour now, just so you know.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that went by fast.
Yeah, and including the intro and all that, definitely. But I wanted to, you to give you the opportunity to tell people about your school, tell people where they can find you if they want to come find instruction. You're in Tennessee, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we're near the Knoxville. We're in Maryville, which is a little town outside of Knoxville, and we're actually closer to the mountains. And I moved up here to be able to go out and do the stuff in the mountains with the family, hiking and horseback riding and bicycling and paddling. On the little river and all of that, and we do that as much as we can.
Nice. Website people should come check out if they want more information.
For that, I would go to hold on. What website should people come to for clearstaichi.com?
Yeah.
Yes, that one.